And we hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on NavaClub.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Carol comes to us from Norcross at the Log Cabin Group. Normally meets on Tuesday nights. And she's got 12 years sobriety. But I've been in the rooms for about 5 years. And I probably heard Carol share, several dozen times. And she's a remarkable lady. And I think you'll find that to be true. And please welcome Carol D. Give her a big round of applause.
Hi, I'm Carol. I'm an alcoholic and a few other things. And I really loved him giving me a couple years. I don't have that many years. My sobriety date is August 14th, 2002. Hopefully I'll get those, Tim. How I got here. It's been quite a ride. I am one of three children, or siblings. I'm not having children. I'm one of three siblings. I am the youngest. I have an older brother, an older sister, 6 and 7 years older. Lived in a house with the family, the parents, the kids. We all looked like we were doing great from the outside. But I had two alcoholic parents. Learned really quickly the best way to exist was to lay low, let the fighting happen, and you go do what you got to do. And I mean, I learned that really early, really early. There were times when we had bags packed, ready for the move, because the parents were going to get divorced in the middle of one of their heated arguments. And my brother and sister were so used to this, they said, Carol, just go back to sleep, honey. It'll be okay. That was kind of what it was on the inside. On the outside, we all smiled, we all got along, we walked side by side. It was beautiful. Lived in Lexington, Kentucky for about 6 years. Not a lot of memories except of a babysitter that my parents sent me to, because my mother was usually drunk in the mornings, and she really didn't have a lot of time to take care of me. So I would stay with the babysitter. And I think she was the... What I remember is she was very, very kind, but she had an abusive... I'm not sure if it was a boyfriend or a husband. And I just remember the dysfunction of going to this place to stay. And I couldn't understand why Mom didn't want me at home with her. She didn't even have a job. I'm like, why am I going over here? And I learned one really cool thing at that place. My favorite song, it was on a little 45, I Like Beer. And I sang it with Kentucky twang at the age of 4 or 5. And my parents had some people over, and I came down the stairs, and I'm like, I like beer. It makes me a jolly good feller. And to this day, I can remember that silly song. And I'm like, maybe that was a sign. Maybe they should have paid attention. But life was good. Life was fine. I really did have loving parents, despite alcoholism. Wasn't abused. Wasn't neglected. Education was a big thing in our family, so we were all told, you go to school, you do what you got to do. There was a wedding. I think I was about 10, and it was at this country club, and this was my first experience with alcohol. And I was in this little dress, and I was with an older cousin, and it was an open bar. And I felt like I was with the big kids, you know, this older cousin. And I was like, ooh, let's go get a drink, you know. And I just remember getting drunk and going up the stairs, and my mother was down at the bottom, and she's looking up at me, and she's like, what are you doing? Nothing. I carried that through my addiction. Nothing. I'm not doing anything wrong. I learned that quickly. It was interesting. I really liked that feeling, because I think as a child growing up, my brother and sister were so much older than me. I was actually like an only child. And there were times when I actually asked my brother and sister, was I adopted? Was I adopted? And you hear it a lot in the rooms, like we tend to talk about the fact we didn't feel like we felt in or fit in. And I had that feeling many times growing up. I just didn't feel like a part of my family. I didn't understand things. There was no one really to talk to. So I would just pretend everything was okay and get through it. Then there was high school. High school was an adventure. I moved to New York City for 2 years. And I was on a swim team, and I met a girl who was a senior, and she was like, oh, we can drink before school. Really? And notice all these things I'm doing. It's like I'm curious, and I think, wow, that might be kind of fun. You know, and I know I don't want to give you like every little story because it's kind of silly, because we know how it goes. But basically, I remember getting totally wasted before school. And we went in, and one thing in my story that's true is God is in it all the way through. And I got to school that morning, and our swim coach, he looked at us and he said, what have you been doing? Nothing. And he made us sit in the pool area for about 2 hours. He said, you just need to stay right here. He didn't send us home, nothing. So I was learning that if I just, you know, smiled and said the right thing, people would let me off the hook. And it worked for a long time. And, you know, the stories go on and on. I started drinking more and more. And I think I was a senior in high school. And behaviors are becoming more promiscuous. Let's see what we can get away with. Let's push it just a little further. And I was only drinking. I really was, but I drank a lot. And we only had one car. We had moved to Ohio at this point. And we had one car. And what I would do is I would sneak out, take the only car we had, go out and party till 3 or 4 in the morning, bring the car back up, and I'd wake up in the morning like, hey, how's everybody doing? You know, and nobody knew. Nobody knew. One night, the party wasn't going so well. I came home early. I'll never forget this because it scared me to death. I came home early and get the car in the driveway, and all of a sudden, the phone's ringing. And someone's calling my father because there's a little domestic issue going on at one of his rental properties. And he had to take that car. And here I come, just like a good alcoholic, I come running up the steps. What's going on, Dad? How many of you would be up at 2 in the morning going, Dad, I heard the phone? I'm sure he thought it was a little odd, plus the car was warm and it was winter. I don't know, you tell me. Or it wasn't winter, it was definitely cool, though. So little things like that, and I always skated by. And I found, for me, drinking was an escape. It was a big escape for me. Changed the way I felt. It seemed like I was more comfortable around groups of people. I would do things that when I was sober, I would never in a million years dream of doing it, because that would just be bad. And I could only do bad things when I was drinking. It was like the two personalities they talk about in the big book. Oh, I was developing them. So I went to college. College was great. Went to Auburn, War Eagle. Had the time of my life. And then I guess I would say my addiction really, really took shape here in Atlanta. I got a job as a teacher, and I moved to Virginia Highlands area. This was prime real estate in my eyes, because I could walk to the bars. I did not have to drive. And when the bars closed, we could just walk back to my apartment and we could keep drinking. I mean, it was the best location for a 22-year-old out of college. I was like, life couldn't get any better than this. So that's what I did for like 3 years, and it didn't affect work. I always loved my job. I love teaching. By the grace of God, I still have my job today. But we would go out, we would drink, we would do whatever. And I loved music. I love live music. And I didn't have that where I grew up. I grew up on a farm out in the middle of nowhere. So to go out and hear live music, that was a big deal to me. And I think I envisioned myself being this, I don't know, really sexy groupie or something. I think that's what I was going for, but I didn't really know what that was. So I would just get really drunk and do what I think they do. you know, because that would work. And I think I made an ass of myself a few times, maybe more. But it was good. It was good times, good times. And in my story, when I was in college, there was a time when I started the blacking out. And one time I had woken up in a place that I didn't know how I quite got there. And I just ran as fast as I could. And I was going to pretend that never happened. But maybe a month or so after that event, someone put some white powder up my nose. And I was like, oh, maybe I won't black out if I have this too. And so I have to share that because it became the reason I liked cocaine. I did. I started drinking and seeing that that might be the solution because I was drinking a lot now. I liked it, and I said, you know what? I don't think I can do that again. I think I better stay away from that stuff. So I did. And it wasn't until about age 27 I was at a party, and I couldn't keep up with people anymore drinking. They were staying up much longer than I was, and they were socializing a lot better than I was. And I finally just said, I'm going. And I have to tell you, I think that's the point in my addiction where I made a deal with the devil. I just said, you know what? I know this is going to be a problem. I already know I drink too much. What the hell? You know, what the hell? I'm going for it. And from that point on, from age 27 to 32, that's what you get. A lot of that. Why did I use? Why did I drink? Because I liked it. You know, I can't stand up here and say, oh, I really hated drinking. Oh, I really hated doing the other stuff. I liked it. It changed the way I felt. And at that time, it was the only solution I had to feel good until it stopped working. And the blackouts were more often. Lies, stories, games weren't working the way I wanted them to anymore. Family, what's family? You get to a point where you don't even know who your family is because you can't talk to them. Every time the phone would ring, I'd be like, nah, not right now. And I'm very blessed. Nothing really terrible happened in my family. In fact, good things happened. My brother and sister had both gotten married. My mother, who had been really deep in her alcoholic addiction, got sober. So she knew who I was. She saw what I was doing. And about 5 years before I got sober, my brother was also, and he is in the program, he was also a big drinker. Must be the Catholic Irish thing, I don't know. But he had gotten sober, and he saw where I was going, and I guess he and Mom probably had one of their meetings about Carol, you know. You know how alcoholics do that shit, right? So I think they got together, and we were down visiting the parents, and my brother took me out for ice cream, and he said, Carol, let me ask you a question. Are you having fun? No. And I did what I always do at work, with friends, you know, start crying, because they'll back off. They'll feel sorry for you, and they won't put the pressure on you quite as much. So we're sitting there with our little ice cream cones, and I'm like, I know I have a problem. I'm like 30 pounds too light. You're right. I need to quit. And he said, well, just read the book. Just save 5 years of your life, you know. Go read the book and try it. So, needless to say, you know how we are when we're not really finished. I said, okay, and we hugged, and he loved me, and everything was beautiful. And needless to say, I got back to Atlanta and went back to my way of living. And I had the big book. I went to Alateen as a child. I knew about the program. So he's calling, the phone's ringing, I'm not answering. But at one point, I'm like, shoot, I've got to talk to him because I'm supposedly going to AA. I'm supposedly not drinking. So I flip the book open and I read this page, you know, skim a couple words. And I go, "Hey, Dave, how you doing?" He's like, "Good, how are you?" Well, I've got wine in my hand. I'm like, "I'm doing great. I went to an AA meeting, and I'm reading the big book. And that part about blah, 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 blah." I'm like, "God, that was so good. I get it." And he's like, "Well, did you read that part about..." And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "You haven't even gotten there yet." I'm like, "Shit." Because I was so thinking I had this. I had... What do? We make plans. We think of all of the things we're going to take care of before we talk to somebody. We've got it all figured out. It didn't work. And that was my first experience with that, where he just called me right out. And I'm like, "Oh, I guess I better go back and read. I missed that." You know, how do we get out of the hole we just walked into so gracefully? So needless to say, I wasn't sober. And I found something a little stronger than powder in 2002. It was the end of a school year, and I was having a hard time getting to work. You know, I had been teaching for quite some time, and I've had anorexia. I've been battling depression. These are all the excuses I used why I was missing work. So it was getting really bad, and they finally had me teaching a kindergarten class. And my father said, "Are you sure you're okay? You're teaching kindergarten now." I'm like, "You have to be really good to teach kindergarten. It's harder than you think." You know, and I'm just going on it. And it is a hard job, by the way. I think I made it more difficult with hangovers and being a little intoxicated at work. Anyway, so it's getting pretty bad. And I get a phone call from my father and sister. My mother is sick. She is battling hepatitis C at this time, and they have her on interferon treatments. And I've known all this, but you know, when you're drinking and everything, you can say, "Yeah, she'll be fine. Let's go out. So I kept saying that. And I wasn't available to mom. I wasn't available to the family. And they said, "Carol, you need to come. You need to come to Florida." "All right, I'll be there." "When?" "Like yesterday, Carol." "Oh, you mean now." Well, I was pretty messed up. I had moved on to some other substances, and I wasn't sleeping a lot, and I surely wasn't eating, and I was on a liquid diet with that. And I got in my car, and I had a few things in my console to help me get from Atlanta to Fort Myers, Florida. And God was with me. I don't know how I got down that road. Don't have a clue, except that I did make it. And when I walked into the house, I made sure I got there at like 10:30 at night, because it'd be a little dark. And as I said, I have two parents that battle alcoholism, and my dad, I knew he would have a few cocktails in him by that time, so he wouldn't notice that I look like hell. You know, that was good cover. And I don't think he did. But the problem is, you have to wake up in the morning. And that was probably the first night's sleep I'd had in a week. And it was painful. And I woke up and I'm like, "Oh, God. Okay, let's put some makeup on." And this is the other thing, when you're drunk all the time, you think that the thicker you put the makeup on, the better it's going to look. I don't know. I don't think it worked. Because when I walked out, my sister looked at me and she was like... And my mother, who was battling liver cancer at this point, her stomach is bloated. She has now got 18 years sobriety. And she turns around and she's like, she was devastated. Because she was looking at me doing what she did to herself. You know, and I can't imagine from her perspective what that must have been like. because as you and I both all know, there's nothing you can do to stop an alcoholic from drinking. If they want to drink, they want to drink, and I wanted to drink. And I wanted to do what I was doing because I'm a very selfish being. And to be honest with you, the only reason I was down there initially is because I had to. I wasn't capable of feeling at that point. I wasn't doing it out of the love of for my mother because I was very, very sick. I had no concept of how to love somebody and genuinely care. But I did get there, and I think that's where God comes in, because God could love. God could love where I couldn't. So, yeah, needless to say, my dad took a peek at me, and you don't mess with my dad. And he just said, get the hell out of here. You do what you're doing somewhere else. Your mother is dying, and I will not have you here. And I went, is he talking to me? I mean, could this really be happening that he's telling me to leave? My mother's dying. What an asshole. How could he say that? Well, I went back to the bedroom, and of course I'm crying because I'm a victim. And my sister looked at me and she goes, you look like a walking skeleton. You look horrible. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't know how bad I looked when I was at the end of my using, but it was obviously pretty bad. And she said, Carol, Dad said, look, you can get some help now, or you go back to Atlanta and you continue your little party. I'm like, damn, that's a long drive. All right, I'll go. She goes, well, he wants you to make the phone call. I'm like, right now? Really? Right this second? Yeah. Right now. Going, stepping back a little bit inside of my head at this point, to be honest with you, I was tired. I was already beaten. You know in the book where it talks about you're beaten, in Bill's story? I had been beaten, but I just hadn't stopped using it. And this is where God came in for me. And, you know, I hate it that it was at my mother's time, but that is what it was. And there were no more places to run to. I had run and run and run and run and run. Lies didn't work. Games didn't work. And I was at this place where I had to make a choice. Are you going to stop, or do you want to keep using and die a miserable death? Because that's what I was looking at. And I have a feeling it was going to be really, really yucky. I can envision what it would have been. And by the grace of God, I made the choice to go get help. And I went into treatment. My mother was still having some procedures done. They were trying to fight the cancer. So I went into a treatment facility, and 2 weeks in, we got the call that she was going down, and she went into a coma. And so I checked out of treatment. Talk about a great place and God being with me, because they let me check out and come back in. So that's kind of odd circumstance. But at her funeral, I share this part only because I think it's so important to talk about how in our addiction we become so blocked off from the world and from feeling and from relationships. And I remember at the funeral, first of all, there was no mention of Carol being in treatment. You know, this funeral isn't about Carol, which I couldn't understand that, because it should all be about me. So it was a secret, which I'm good at that. I've done that my entire life. Just pretend, you know, you can do this. Just pretend and get through it for your mother, for Pete's sake. That's what my dad said. And I'm like, yeah, he's right about that. So I'm standing in this funeral service, and I'm seeing my brother and his wife, and I'm seeing my sister and her husband. I'm seeing my dad and all these people who love him. I'm seeing all the people that came who loved my mother. And I'm by myself. And I'm like, wow, this sucks. But that was it. That was where I was. That was life. no relationships, completely isolated, miserable, tired, beaten. Every adjective that's in that book, I had it. And I was like, oh, wow. And then something came to mind. My father had said to me, he said, you know what? When you die, darling, I certainly hope somebody shows up at your funeral. These are moments in my addiction where he was trying to make a point. What are you doing with your life? Is there going to be anybody in your life when you go who says, I cared about her? Or I wanted to be a part of her life? I'm like, yeah, I got lots of friends. Let me tell you, when I came back from treatment to Atlanta, I had party friends. Lots and lots of party friends. I think there are only 3 people that I really keep in contact with today from that part of my life. All the others that kept me busy day and night, don't hear a word. Today, I have so many people in my life that I know when I went into treatment and I made that decision to not drink and not do any other mind-altering substances, I knew I was ready to change. Scared as hell, but ready to change. Because I don't know, when you go through an experience where you see someone's life taken away, not because they did what I do, but because just naturally life was taken, you have to, you know, for me, I had to look at myself and say, what the hell are you doing? What the hell are you doing? So I did the whole treatment thing, came back to Atlanta, and they didn't want me to leave when I did. They said, you know, you need some aftercare. I'm like, no, I have to work. Because, see, my father's pissed, my brother's pissed, my sister's pissed. I have to pay the bills at my house. I'm sorry. I would love to stay, but Dad doesn't really want me here. So I came back to Atlanta, and the thing they did is they said, okay, relapse prevention. What are you going to do to make sure you don't drink or use again? So I went to meetings. The second I stepped foot in this city, because I couldn't go to my old playgrounds, could I? I wasn't about to go down to Fuzzy's. Wasn't going to go to Northside. Wasn't going to go to Blind Willie's. No, don't think that would be a good place to stay sober right now. So I went to Triangle Club. Was the first place because I had just literally pulled in and I was like, somebody help me. I used that thing called the phone and found out where the meetings were because obviously I didn't really know, even though I told my brother I was in every meeting in Atlanta. I went to Triangle and started just getting in the swing, and then I went to another meeting where I met my sponsor. And I was not going to waste any time. I had a fear of going back out that was genuine. And I said, I cannot afford to do that again. I want to be with my family. I want to have a life. I want to be a good person. Deep down in my heart, I think I knew I was a good person. I was just really sick. Really, really sick. So once I met my sponsor, we did what sponsors tell us to do, and that is go through the big book. And there was something about this woman. It wasn't so much that I said, oh, we'll hang out and we'll be like pals and go out and do stuff together. She knew the book. When she spoke, it was like me sitting in a classroom and I was getting education. And I said, that's what I need. That's what I need. And I couldn't have done better. Well, God couldn't have done better. God put the perfect woman in my path. And we went through those steps. And she taught me the basics, you know, the foundation of how to live without drinking. How do you live without drinking? How do you feel good in your own skin? And I'm telling you what, I still think I'm adopted. I'm working on it. You know, I found out when we got to the fourth step, one of my biggest problems growing up was insecurity. I was so insecure, and I see it today in other people, and I go, gosh, you know, if I just believed in myself a little bit more and acknowledged some of the good things I have and, you know, the good qualities in me, I wouldn't be such a dumbass. You know, selfishness, self-centeredness, that all comes in me as a result of not thinking I'm good enough. So I go totally opposite, and I make it all about me, and I can get in a crowd of people, and I can make you think I got it. And I'm shaking like a leaf inside because I don't believe yet. You know, I'm a lot better than I was, let me tell you. But what I have found by working these steps is that I don't blame any of my actions on my family. I don't blame anything on, you know, where I grew up or any of my personal family experiences. I blame it on me. I made choices, you know, to do what I did. But I will say I developed some behavioral patterns, the manipulation, the lying, all of those things. I developed those very young because it was a coping mechanism in my house. And I was so self-absorbed and I wanted what I wanted. I was the youngest. You know how it is for youngest. You know, you want what you want when you want it. And I would do just about anything to have that. And so I've learned in this program, okay, Carol, guess what? You're not the only one on this planet. You're not the only one that has issues. You're not the only one that is fearful. Why don't you get out of yourself and start thinking of other people? And be amazed at what happens. Well, I am amazed because today, despite all these human conditions I have, if I work with another addict alcoholic, it's not nearly as powerful. I'm a pretty happy person today. I get up. I don't try and plan things too much. I just take life as it comes. And I think the gift is that by working those steps, I had a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening. And I was in a meeting one time, and you may know her name. Her name is Paige. It was my first month in Atlanta, and this girl, Paige, just so eloquently explained what a spiritual awakening was. She said, I can't tell you. I'm like, come on. What is the answer? And she said, you only know it when you have it. There are no words to describe what happens when you have that spiritual awakening. You just feel it. And there's no better feeling in the world. And people say to me, they're like, Carol, you know, how you doing? And I'm like, I'm good. And they keep saying, still? I'm like, yeah, really I am. Because I let God into my life. And I think that as an alcoholic, I want to say that I'm unique and I'm special. And without the big book, you know, all the world's going to go to hell, you know. But the big book to me, what it did is it took me back to principles. The big book is all about principles and guides to live my life. And if you look at the principles behind the steps, honesty. Boy, nice way to start out the steps. I got to be honest. Really? I suck at that. Be as honest as you can. You know, and with God's help, you'll become more and more honest. Have some courage. You know, when you get to that step four, where's your courage to stand up? Stand up for yourself, stand up for your friends, stand up for your family. Be accountable, be present. And I realized by doing the steps, those were all of the things I was missing growing up. Because I thought someone was just going to give that stuff to me. They were just going to give it to me. And I would say, ooh, I'm honest. Ooh, I'm, you know, I'm humble. Ooh, I'm giving and kind. No, you have to work at this stuff. I remember I did something early in recovery, and I'm so glad in this thing it's about progress, not perfection. And honesty was a tough one for me. And I had done something, and it was with money, and it was with the family, and I'm trying to, you know, be perfect, you know. I want the whole family to think, oh, Carol's healed, you know, she's an AA, and she's got this thing. And I told this story, and it was saying that I only borrowed so much money, but I really borrowed that much. I borrowed a lot more than I said. And my sister knew it, but I wasn't going to tell my father about it. But my sister did not get that memo. And so my father's talking to me, and of course, you know, I'm not going to say anything. And then he goes, yeah, so your sister told me. I'm like, huh? And I went into that fear of just like when I was drinking. I went, oh, shit, how am I going to get out? How do I get out of this? You know, I lied. Now I'm going to have to lie again, and I'm going to have to overcompensate and lie some more. And he said something, I'll never forget this. He's a wise man, he said. Because of course, I said, I'm sorry. And he goes, you're not sorry. You just got caught. And I went, in the old days, I'd just go get drunk and not think about that comment. And I sat there and I'm like, you know what? He really is a pain in my ass. And I thought about it and I thought about it and I said, I think I need to go to another book study and I need to, you know, I need to grow. So I learned very quickly in my first couple of years of sobriety that I'm human. I'm fallible. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm not going to be perfect. But if I keep doing what you guys tell me in these rooms every day, if I just practice it, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to stay above water. The second I start saying, oh, but he doesn't understand, or, well, you should have seen what that person did. When I start going back to that behavior, I might be in trouble. You know, this is the growth of this program has been for me to realize that as an adult, you know, like my sister, she's the only one in our family who came out not alcoholic or addict or anything. I still think she has some issues, but that's a whole nother meeting. I love her dearly. But she said, Carol, because in the summers we spend time together. And when I first got sober, of course, it was AA. You know, that's all I talked about. And she was like, why do you guys make such a big deal out of stuff? That's just what you're supposed to be doing. And I go, because we don't get it. Isn't that sad? But she, honest to God, she doesn't understand why we have to work so hard. And, you know, I don't care that I have to work so hard because my life is so much better as a result of it. I'm okay with it. You know, it was worse out there doing the work I did before to lie and cheat and steal. You know, and be lonely and have no relationships. Now I'm really excited. You know, if I have a little conflict today, it's good. You know, because that means I'm engaging in somebody else's life and maybe, you know, trying to have relationships. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And if I make mistakes, I make mistakes. But owning them is the number one thing. Tonight, getting up here to speak, it's the last time I shared, they had this, they had up like 2 10-minute speakers and then me. And I just never will forget this because it sort of sums up this whole thing. It's, he goes, yeah, we have 2 10-minute speakers and then our main event is Carol D. I'm like, that is awesome. I am the main freaking event. At a meeting. I am so excited. I've aspired to something I never in a million years would have thought I'd be doing. And, you know, when I work with women, two sponsees that I have today are here, and they're godsends. I love them. I remind myself all the time that, you know, we're just people trying to do the right thing. You know, we get up in the morning just like everybody else. And the only difference is that we use this thing called a big book to guide us through that day. And I'm okay with that. I'm really okay with that. And I have found that service work is truly the gift that God gave me in the program. Because every time I work with another woman and hear their stories and realize that we're all the same. We all have issues. I love to call them issues because it sounds better than we're all alcoholics. I like to say I just have an issue. See, I'm still sick, right? Sounds so much better. But they have been blessings in my life, and I'm so grateful they came to be here with me. And the other thing I want to say is today when I wake up, the number one thing that I know is that God has a plan for me. And God has a plan for every one of us here tonight. Because I know that if God wasn't with me throughout my journey, I wouldn't be here. Because I was doing everything in my power to kill myself. And God, I think, from the way I see it, God said, no, you got stuff to do. You got stuff to do. And when Mom passed, she had accomplished what she needed to do. My brother and sister and I are now very close. And all my life, I never felt like I was their sister. And now we are. We're true siblings because we realized at that point, we're all we got. You know, our parents, you know, it's the cycle of life. They're not going to stay forever. So we need to know each other and be there for each other and love each other. And, you know, the other thing that I have definitely realized is that my mother, she got me sober. That whole event was like the time where Carol got it together. And my mother, you know, she couldn't share it with me, but it's okay. Because she is with me in spirit. And every day I get up, God and Mom and all the other people up there who, you know, are looking down and wishing us the best, they're saying, come on, get up and do it. You know, in the third step it says, you know, you turn over your will and your life, you know, somebody say it, it's gone. But you turn it over to God, right? What is it? It's step three. I don't know. I really don't know. It's step three. And I got to be honest with you. Even now, I just know I'm turning over everything of me. And I'm letting God work through me. And hopefully, you know, I'll be able to help somebody. That's all it's about. And I watched that movie. Did anybody watch that movie? It's Johnny Depp. What's Eating Gilbert Grape? Okay, I had never seen that movie, so I pop it in last night, and I'm like watching it. And there's a point where the girl asks him, what do you want? What do you want? Because he was doing everything. He's helping this person, this person, this person. He is just, everything's about everyone else, right? And in this program, we talk a lot about service work, which is important. But what do you want? You know, that's important too. And he said, I just want to be a good person. I was like, dang, way to simplify that, huh? Way to simplify it. And I think that's what I try to keep this whole thing simple. I just want to wake up and be a good person today. I don't want to cause any pain. I don't want to live a life of craziness. And AA has given me the ability to do that. I love you all for being here. Thank you so much for letting me be a part of your group. And I am quitting just a few minutes early, but I'm sure you're okay with that. So, thank you.
Thanks for being our main event. Hey, you guys were very generous earlier, and I'm going to pass the basket again. So if you don't feel like putting any money in, that's perfectly okay. But if you missed the basket last time, the second passing is to enhance our sound system. We're really going to try to class up the joint a little bit if we possibly can. So anything that y'all can afford, we appreciate it.
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much, Carol. That was awesome. We have a white chip to commemorate one day. If you'd like to try this way of life one day at a time, clean and sober, we offer a white chip. Whenever I like to pick up a white chip. Silver chip for 30 days. There you go. Anybody else got 30 days? Red shirt for 90 days. Anybody got 90 days? Here we go. Anybody else got 90 days? Yellow shirt for 6 months. Anybody got 6 months? All right. Anybody else got 6 months? And the green chip for 9 months. 1 year or multiples, the blue chip. Anybody got a year or multiples? All right. How many years?
12.
Oh, wow, right on. Anybody else got a birthday?
13.
Anybody else got a birthday? Anybody want to reconsider on a white chip? Big hand for the chips you hold.
Okay, time for AA related announcements and NAVA Club announcements. Anybody want to tell us about the Atlanta Roundup? Okay, Julie, get us started. Hey, Julie.
On Saturday, June 23rd, there'll be another
$6.30, $5. I have tickets if you'd like to buy one, two or three, or more. If you'd like to buy one tonight, you can buy one for $5 for the $7 at the door. Once you get in, you can also then purchase some coffee from the Taylor County. Yeah, that's June 23rd, Saturday. We're going to open the doors at 6:30, and Liz Melendez is going to come on early, so she's going to play a pretty good set early, and Tinsley's going to come on at 9. We're going to get as many other acts as we can, and then big finish at 11 o'clock. So Tinsley will also be part of that. So it's been great. It'll be the fifth one, and the advance tickets are $5 now. And we probably, if we got like we did last time, we may have to turn people away at the door. So, okay, what else we got? Theron S. is going to come from the Robbers Roost group next week. And then we have Diane F. H. from Biscayne Rim.
H.
Diane H. of the We've Had Enough. I haven't even started. Okay, so if that's everything, if there are no further announcements, I remind you that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Every mind is to place principles before personalities, and for those who will, please join hands with the Lord's Prayer.
Keep us sober.
Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, hallowed be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Then you come back to the work that you work today.
First I slept, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. I look into love's window for a heart that beats for me. Takes me where the promises are real. And I always long for something to set me free. Take me where the promises are.